This is the Silver Fox Hustle Podcast. Hello, and this is the Silver Fox Hustle Podcast. This is episode number 87, and if you're watching us on YouTube, please click on that subscribe button, and obviously we are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the works, all your usual podcast platforms. Now, in the studios with me today on this latest episode is a former national rugby player. He is a former teacher at St. Andrew's Secondary School. He is also a founder, or the founder of Spotify Kids, a multi-sport academy for kids. We'll talk about that later on. And he is also currently the GM, the general manager of Singapore Rugby Union. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Sydney Kumar.
It's an honor. It's an honor. Big honor.
welcome and greetings. And, you know, just to warm up a little bit, yep. Over the weekend or the past few weekends, the National League finals were held.
Yes. Last weekend.
Yeah. How was that, man?
I think what's awesome is the first big one that we had post-COVID. So okay. We managed to line up some of the games. I think there were four games on that day from 11 all the way to it ended off at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. Singapore Cricket Club ended up being the Premier League champions.
Okay.
I think it's the first time in a while for them.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they've played Bucks Rugby Club a couple of times in the finals.
Okay.
And Bucks have edged them out the last few years, I think.
Okay.
But all in all, for rugby, it was a good day out. A good weekend out, actually. So that weekend, three big events were happening all over Singapore for rugby.
At the same time,
wow. Different stadiums. But you don't really.
And were you like overseeing every one of them? Or?
No. Okay. So I don't think we have the bandwidth from the union's perspective to oversee everything.
Okay.
There was concurrently on Saturday, there was the junior rugby clubs league.
Okay.
Right. So the academy kids and all that were playing. And then there was also the St. Patrick's Day Women's Cup.
Okay.
At a CCAB stadium.
Right.
So rugby is around. It's just that, you know,
it was let's put it this way. It was a massive rugby weekend.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Now, over the next hour or so, right, we'll talk about a range of stuff, right? From the sport itself to you teaching, you donning national colours, obviously. But let's start off with the young Sydney, right? What were you like as a young boy growing up? Were you the sporty kind? I think I know what the answer is going to be, but what were you like growing up?
What was I like growing up? boisterous, a bit of a delinquent.
Really?
Not so much.
I think not so much.
In primary school, I was a bit more of a cowboy. I took on, I remember, P5, P6, I took on four CCAs.
Is that allowed?
Back then, there were no...
Oh yeah, last time was no cowboy town.
Yeah. So every day after school, I would have a CCA. Okay. I was in the science club. I was in boys brigade.
Okay.
I was in football. Okay. And I was in rugby.
This was so that you don't need to go back home, right? One of the reasons.
Sort of. But I think back then... Yeah, it was, for me, it was all sport, all just being active. Yeah.
Nice.
I wouldn't say I was anti-studying, but I just wanted to be active.
Which schools, by the way? Primary, secondary?
St. Andrews. Okay. Junior.
Right.
St. Andrews. Okay. Secondary.
Okay, that explains, right? Yeah. How about your size, right? I mean, were you built like
I wouldn't say scrawny. I guess I had the height and a bit of a frame.
Okay.
Right. But then I only started applying proper strength and conditioning principles and all that probably towards in the early parts of my uni times.
Late.
Okay. So I didn't really do proper S&C and all that all the way until
uni. Why? Because of education or because of... You just don't like weights training. I know a lot of people.
It's really more of education and probably the need. So before that, I played for the National Under 19 squad. And back then, you know, at the age group level, you could get away with certain things.
I see.
Like I didn't have to be massive to survive on the field and all that, right? So I was quick enough. I could do certain things. And I didn't see that need.
Nice.
As I got further on into my playing career, also because after I had a fitness base and all that, then I started to think about, if I want to make playing in the national team a constant thing, then I would have to be more focused about these things.
I see. Now, you spoke about football just now.
Yep.
So you did play football then. And even now, maybe sometimes a kickabout?
Now, weeknight kickabouts, 10 to 12 midnight.
They're not bad, man. So you do play the sport.
I still try.
Okay, who do you support, by the way?
Man U.
Okay. A great weekend.
Great weekend.
Right, let's talk about rugby a little bit, right? Yeah. How did this love for rugby start? How? Because not many schools, obviously St. Andrews, right? But in terms of the sport itself, probably the school helped, in the school.
Definitely. I think back then, apart from being in the school, I don't think there were many other opportunities outside of CCA to pick up the sport.
Okay.
So I stumbled onto it, I think, in primary three.
Right.
There was just a simple call for participation in those inter-class games and all that. Who wants to sign up?
Okay.
And PE, you learn to run around with an oval-shaped ball.
Okay.
And back then it was simple, right? You didn't think about scrums, lineouts, or whatever, set pieces, or who was bigger and all that. You just thought about, take the ball, run into space, don't get caught.
Yep. It's just like a police and thief or like catching.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
So from there, I fell in love with that. All my entire primary school career. My entire primary school life, all I thought about was just trying to, you know, get better at that game of running away from my friends.
were you, what would I say? What's the word? Were you a natural at that time? I mean, looking back, obviously, right? Do you think that you were a natural? Because it's a...
because there are no historical records, I can say anything I want
to say. please do.
No, I would say I had a bit of an advantage. I don't know what it was, but I had a bit of a flair for the sport in that sense. So I actually managed to play up an age in that sense.
Okay.
So I was, I think in P4 or P5, I was invited to go to Perth with the P6s.
Mm.
That also at that time made me a bit of an outcast with So also at the time made me a bit of an outcast with the boys because the P6s were like, who is this young guy? And all that. But I mean, that's back then. My memory may be fuzzy, you know. But yeah, so I had a bit of that advantage in that
sense. I see.
Yeah.
Mm, not bad, man. Now, I want to talk about, how about support from your parents, though?
Mm.
Was there good support from your parents, your family, relatives, whatever, in terms of the sport itself, you know?
I think my parents were pretty easygoing in that sense.
Mm.
So as long as I was still putting time into my studies, I wasn't falling too far back, you know. So they pretty much allowed things to go. Hence 4 CCAs and my dad my dad played a lot of football growing up.
Okay.
So he was always okay with sports and things like that.
Nice. Now, let's talk about rugby, the sport, specifically, right? Now, because, listen, I got to tell you, I'm ignorant that I'm in terms of the knowledge about the sport, right?
Yeah.
I'm a football person, right?
Mm.
What is the difference between rugby union and rugby league? Because I see that there's a difference, obviously, right?
Why
do you call it rugby union and why do you call it rugby league? What's the difference for people who's watching this? And I think it would be good, you know, good
so,
info.
Don't quote me on the exact details, but some time back when rugby first came out, league and union, there was a split.
Okay.
Right? So, of course, because of organizations and because of maybe, I don't know, politics back then or whatever, right?
Mm.
So, they decided to have a split. And from there, the versions of the sport just started to carve their own different niches.
Where was this? If you're trying to get
honestly,
the history back
I
then,
don't
or
know whether it was in England or
okay,
I'm
okay,
not sure, I'm not sure.
Okay, so they just split because of whatever reason, right?
Correct.
Okay,
and then what you see now is slight variations in the game.
Okay,
so in the league version, you play a 13-man game. When rugby union, most of the time, the 15-a-side code, right? So you play a 15-a-side game.
Okay,
And then offhand, people like. I mean, for the fans of rugby league, it's a bit more free-flowing. It's 6 possessions.
Okay.
And in those possessions, you get to be as creative as you want. Of course, there are certain set pieces around it. But the emphasis is not that.
Okay.
Right? It's on that free-flowing, use your 6 possessions to try to score, that kind of thing. Whereas for union, it's basically similar to any of your territorial invasion games, your football and all that, right? You have time period,
okay,
your 90 minutes, 80 minutes okay, to just play.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And in Singapore, do they have the league and the union? Do they have a split or is just...
In Singapore, league, I'm very sure there are small pockets of enthusiasts about league.
Okay.
And they probably gather to play... I recall a few years back, someone actually tried to franchise a bit of a Singapore rugby league team.
Okay.
But that didn't fall through.
Right.
But otherwise, Union is the popular game here. Mm. And with Union comes also rugby sevens.
Right, right. Yeah. Nice, nice. Touch rugby.
Mm.
What about touch rugby? The differences. Obviously, so this one is definitely so much different, right?
Yeah.
So simple, just simplify it for us. Touch rugby.
Touch. I think they would kill us if they hear us calling it touch rugby. But it's touch football. So the game is touch football.
Okay. Right.
I mean, traditionally people think.
Sorry,
people
call it.
Yeah. Better apologize. joking. Huh? But people call it touch rugby back then for its oval shaped ball linked to rugby. But it's actually a very different game.
Okay.
Right. It's actually more closely linked to league.
Ah.
In the sense that six possessions.
Okay.
No contact.
Okay.
And then you just try your best to score.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. So hence you see the popularity in your Australias and your New Zealands because league is popular there. Touch football is popular there as
right.
well.
Right. Nice. So we got that out of the way, everyone. Union, rugby league and touch football.
Yes.
We got it right this time. Now, you probably would have gotten this a lot from back then till now, I'm sure, with parents and with whoever, right? It's a dangerous sport.
Mm.
Now, is it a dangerous sport?
Of course. Okay, I've said this many times before and I will probably repeat it. Every sport is dangerous to a certain extent. If you don't take the right precautions, if you're not coached the right way, if you're not prepared the right way, people often ask me, I tell people I play rugby for what 20 plus years, you know.
Yep.
Say, how many injuries you have? Yes, I have my fair share of injuries, but I'm still playing it today. Right? So I think with every sport, enter with an open mind, you know. Don't go in thinking about I'm gonna get injured.
Right.
Right. So you go into it with an open mind, going through a proper protocols. Right, proper coaching, proper session plans, going through proper programs that will help.
Right.
And then for rugby specifically, it looks like that, or the impression of that danger is like that because of the pure contact element.
Yes, correct. Right? You're right.
So can't escape.
You know, I want to say this because I'm very biased as well because we are sports people, right? Mm. Because as you said, any sport in the world is dangerous. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just looking at things and looking at the sports over the years, right? I'm looking at basketball as well. It is really dangerous because of the stop-start, because of the twisting and turning, and it's very fast-paced.
Yes.
There's you can't hide when you're playing basketball. So that's just an example.
Yeah.
So what you said there was definitely, you know, spot on about every sport is dangerous. And like you said, the proper coaching comes in, the proper technique comes in. And when you say technique as well, you know, when there's contact and all, you need to know how to ride a tackle.
Yes.
I think that's important as well. You know, in football as well.
Exactly.
When you know someone is coming, it's up there. You know automatically. Yeah, you know
how
to.
The tackle is coming. I'm going here. Yeah, you know, it can't be that. Right?
Yeah. So I think that's key. And anyway, you really really spot on there. I also want to touch on this, Sydney, and I think this is very important, especially coming from a football background, right? It is also known as the gentleman's sport, not football, but rugby, right? And I love that about the sport, right? And how has that, you know, become like that in rugby? You know, because we talk about grown men not contesting a referee's decision after, I don't know, it could be a bad call, right? One of the worst decisions ever. But you still are able to control yourself.
Yeah.
How is that possible, Sydney? Please tell me.
I think it's something that rugby union takes pride in.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, we operate with a set of values, and respect is one of the key values of the game.
Yeah.
All the way from the top, where you see your national players representing players at the World Cup, whether they're All Blacks, whether they play for England or whatever, all the way to the grassroots level, right? That value of respect transcends through the sport. Mm. And I think a lot of it comes from that cycle of kids growing up, watching role models, respecting referees, mm. and understanding that when they are playing, they offer the same respect.
Right.
And it works both ways. So the match officials as well, they go into the games knowing certain things. They, yep. they command a certain level of respect.
Right.
And therefore, just before the game, they engage the players, they speak to the teams,
mm, mm, right.
they have their team talks and tell the players what to expect.
Right.
And then after games, you know, sometimes the referees, if they're more comfortable, they join the teams for beers and things like that. You know, that's part of that.
It's a culture.
Culture, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you spoke about this, right? And do you we're talking about grassroots level when they first start off, the kids, right?
Mm.
Is this really instilled in them about the respect part, the culture part? You know, is that instilled in them when they are still like
start? Especially at the club level. I think at the club level, that's where you see all this culture and all that come out
right.
most prominently. Right. Because why? Because a lot of the coaches, maybe they are parents first and then coaches second, right? So they get their accreditation or whatever and then they go and take their teams. And then imagine in your team, right? Your coach is your friend's dad and things like that. And a lot of times at the lower levels, at the grassroots level, junior rugby level, these coaches are also the same refs and the same officials, the same guys that you see every weekend at the club and taking care of you and things like that. So that's where you see the cultures more prevalent in the junior clubs. Mm.
It's really a kind of like a family culture, family affair thing, man.
Yes. And what you see as well in the connectedness of the clubs. So some of the senior clubs that have this connection all the way down to the grassroots, the junior levels. For example, SEC, right?
Mm.
So they won the premiership on Saturday, right? And what you see is after that final, right, a lot of them brought their families, their kids, and all that in their nice academy jerseys, came to take a nice family photo. And that's where you see that whole pathway connected.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I love to make the comparison with football, right? Mm. And you spoke about instilling that in the younger ones, you know, talking about culture, respecting the referee especially. That's the most important part, you know, respecting everyone, parents, even your opponents, right?
Mm.
And I have to say this, at the lower levels, we do have that. You know, we do have coaches doing that with the kids. I'm talking about football and everything else, right? And even when they are growing up playing for clubs and all, you do have coaches doing that. But you know what's the problem?
What's the problem?
The problem is watching football on TV.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So when you watch football on TV and you see players shouting at referees, every single decision is being, you know, contested. That's when, you know, you can't get a hold of the kids anymore because they're doing out there. The pros are doing out there. How are you going to stop this?
Yeah.
But in rugby, you see it on TV.
Yeah.
They don't question the referees, right?
Hence that culture of role modeling and all that. That's very important.
Yeah.
Like as a kid growing up, your role models are not immediately your seniors or whatever. Your role models are the guys you watch on TV every week, right?
Yep.
Playing for the All Blacks or playing for England or whatever. And these are the guys that you see most humble, speaking to refs in a very professional tone, not shouting back. Yeah. And I think that's the difference currently between the two sports.
Mm.
For football, I mean, just a simple example, you watch Manchester United.
Right.
The captain of the team, I don't need to say who.
BF.
He, every other time he's complaining or moaning about a decision.
Exactly.
I think the last few games I saw also, like every other game is a yellow card for dissent and things like that. It doesn't paint such a positive image or being a role model in a sense for the juniors.
And the worst part is he's the captain.
Yeah, that says a lot, right?
Exactly. And you're right about that. Any myths you want to dispel about the game that you can think of off your head? Like, you know, something that you want to get it off your chest?
Any myths? Rugby. I think let's go back to the injury portion about rugby, right? I think almost everyone that you speak to about rugby, everyone is talking about injuries and all that. So like I said, first thing is, you know, every sport is dangerous to a certain extent if you are not properly coached or properly trained or in a proper program. I think the other thing that I wanted to dispel is also that rugby union as a sport is probably the only sport in the world, right, that can factor in all shapes and sizes.
What do you mean?
If you are a bit bigger in size, there's a position for you. If you're a bit faster, skinnier, there's a position for you. If you're smaller in stature but got quick feet, there's a position for you.
Right.
So not really a negative thing, but yeah. So that's something interesting that a lot of people don't tend to realize.
So, ladies and gentlemen, there's still hope for me.
you can play any sport, I think.
No. Yeah, so yeah, you're right, man. It's like, you know, it caters to anyone so that you put them in their positions, yeah? Yeah. And again, you know, I like to make the comparisons right to football, right? If you're overweight, you just go in goal. when we were growing up.
Even now, right, I see some of the social media comments on which club there was one club with a goalkeeper that seemed a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And then I see the social media comments are like, oh,
yeah,
harsh.
It's harsh, yes. Definitely. Now let's talk about the national team when you were playing, right? You played for them for about 10 years or so?
Yeah.
And when was this, when you first got that call up?
Like I mentioned just now, I was playing for the under-19s in 2003, 2002-2003.
Yeah.
Back then, it was a bit of a thick-skin self-call-up kind of thing.
Okay.
I'll explain why.
Right.
So after the A division season, there was a call-up for the combined schools.
Okay.
Right? So I was like, I thought I did well. I was playing well and all that, right? I said, my friends got call-up. The ACS guys got call-up. The Raffles guys got call-up. Where's my call-up? So I was like, fine. When is training? I shall just, try to slot myself in somewhere. And then from there,
How do you slot yourself in a national team training, man?
That was combined schools.
Right, okay.
So from there, that was early stages. So the actual call-up, I think, was in 2007.
Okay.
I received an email from back then general manager about, you know, coming down for the national teams and training with the 7 squad and things like that. So I played from 2007 to 2017.
Right.
Yeah.
What was it like, man? For the first call up when you got it and you know, wearing obviously with the national flag on your chest. Yeah. You know, what was the feeling like?
I think back then it was done a bit more professionally. There was a bit of prestige. 2007, I think I was waiting to enter uni.
Ah, okay.
Right. So I received an email. Right, and it's really like old school lah. So you now this you probably get a call up on WhatsApp,
right,
or something, right? So I received
it's that. Nice, man, to get an email like you know with a proper
dear, yes. I can still remember, so and so, you're invited to join the squad. Then we are working towards SEA Games. This is the program, you know. So are you keen? Are you on board?
What was it like, man?
No, it was for me.
Was that even a question? Are you keen?
No, there was no doubt.
No
question. Yeah. No question at all.
Right.
So for me, like I shared just now, right, I started playing rugby for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Right. Along the way, I think after secondary school, JC time, right, that was when I started to aspire to say, one day, I want to be there, putting on a national jersey, you know, sing the national anthem, that kind of thing. And then when the call up actually came, I was all in.
Right.
To me, That 10 years, right, almost disappeared. Every other aspect of my life disappeared because I was all in on rugby.
You were already within that 10 years itself. You were already teaching and started teaching at all?
Yeah, I started teaching in 2011.
Right. Okay, so you were teaching and obviously when you got a call up, obviously you got to go. And you guys won the SEA Games in 2015?
No.
Sorry, silver medal.
Silver medal in 2017.
17 in Malaysia.
Sorry for that also.
Yeah, please tell me.
Yeah, so by 2017, I was already 30, 31, right?
Okay.
So approaching the last legs.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I had a
31.
31, I think.
Yeah, that's like you at your peak, isn't it?
But in the game of sevens, it's quite demanding.
Okay.
And then also, I had just come back from quite a serious knee injury.
Okay.
So I missed the 2015 SEA Games because of that serious knee injury.
Okay.
I came back to the squad in 2016.
Okay.
Then my entire goal was to make the 2017 SEA Games squad and then retire from the national team. And then train, put everything aside, just everything in, right?
Right.
2017 came, selection came at CCAB. The coaches pulled me aside and said, hey, you are not going to make it.
Wow.
We are taking 12 guys up. You are the 13th guy. So back then, right, it was before training, I tell you. Harsh.
Oh, before training?
Before training. So I was like, wow, am I supposed to continue training? Do I pretend or, you know? So then they announced the squad to the team. Every one of them, I mean, like 90% of the squad was younger than me. I only had a couple, one or two guys around my age. So they were like, hey, Sid, you okay?
So how many players were part of that, the ones that were left out in that initial, including you?
I can't remember. I think we always had a couple of trials. Okay. The wider squad was about 20 plus, 30.
Okay.
Then we always cut.
Yes, yes.
Right, until the last part. Then probably left a few lah.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that training session, I went back. That's it lah, right? I thought that was the end of the road.
Yeah.
Already 13th man, what am I going to do? I'm not going to keep my hopes up for somebody to get injured. What? Right? So I think it was a month out to the SEA Games.
Okay.
Went back, continue work, move on lah. Started beers and all that, all back to life lah.
Must be a shitty feeling the next morning, man, when you go
horrible.
To work.
It's horrible.
Yeah?
Yeah. So back to life, and then the time came for the squad to travel up.
Okay.
So the squad traveled up on the Monday. They had training on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
After the training, I didn't know. I was in a boardroom for a meeting.
Mm.
Then my phone rang. My assistant coach called. Uh-oh. It can't possibly be.
Yeah, man.
I haven't done anything for two, three weeks. Though. It can't possibly be. So I was like, okay, I need to take this call from the meeting. I was like, hey, excuse me. I went outside. I said, what are you doing now? I said, I'm in a meeting. I said, can you get yourself ready?
Wow.
Go and speak to so-and-so, your principals and all that, right?
Yep,
your stuff ready, get your things ready. We are probably going to decide and let you fly up soon because one of the players got injured. So then I was like, what am I supposed to do? But of course, that was my ultimate goal, right?
Yep.
So I effectively threw everything aside. I had no other details.
Right.
I just, hey, guys, I got to go.
Yeah.
Thing carry on without me. I went back. So started to sort out my things. I started to plan and whatever, right? And that was on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Mm. The tournament was on that Friday, Saturday.
Oh, that's quick, man.
Yeah. So I had to just get ready so that they can slot me into one of those SEA Games flights to KL.
Okay.
And then...
Is the rugby tournaments, does it start before the opening ceremony like football?
Usually.
Usually.
No. I think that was after.
Right.
I think it was after. Yeah.
Okay.
And because the sevens is just a two-day tournament.
Yeah.
But football is a few games.
And when you went up, it was in Malaysia, right?
Yeah.
How... Obviously, you guys did well. You got the silver medal and stuff. But how about you? Did you play and
train? I played enough. So after I got confirmation about the flight, I knew the day. I didn't know the time.
Okay.
So they just told me we'll slot you in on flight on Thursday.
Okay.
Like, okay, what time? Likely afternoon. So, off work on Thursday, went to Sports Council, went to Sports Singapore.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, better squeeze in some time at the gym.
Yep.
Panic, last minute gym session, collected my Yonex kit and then off to the airport in the afternoon.
Nice, man.
Flew down.
Wow. Yeah. So that's the beauty of becoming player number 13, man. Just in case, right?
Beauty.
The beauty of it, yeah. You know, but yeah. So you did well, man. And I just want to ask you this question, right? And You donned the national colours for, what, 10 years? And you said it yourself, right? You obviously, it started off with passion, but and then after a while, it was the aim to be there. Mm. And, you know, you wore it proudly, and you also were trying to get so hard or trying to get into that squad in 2017 so bad, you know, after that injury and all, right? Mm. And you spoke about it just now. Do you see playing for the national team as a privilege? Or it's a sacrifice? This question is because of, I give you the context, right? You know, because some national players, not only, I'm not talking about rugby, I'm talking about football, I'm talking about any other sport, right?
Yep.
Because it comes with being away at maybe 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month.
Yep.
And then after a while, I've heard of people saying that, hey, it's a sacrifice, man. I'm sacrificing for the country. I'm going away and I'm sacrificing for the country. I'm leaving my family behind and blah, 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 right? In your opinion, is that a sacrifice or is it just a privilege, man? If I have to leave my family for 2 weeks, I'm going. Because, you know, not many people has that opportunity to represent your country, man.
Yeah.
Right? So what's your take on that?
For me, it's all pride, all privilege, always an honor. if you ask me now whether I could, I would stitch up my body and go again, right? But I think the reality in Singapore is that, you know, it always comes with that sacrifice element, and that's something you can't escape.
Okay.
It's just that the emphasis you place on the sacrifice element, yeah, or whether it's all about the pride for you.
Yeah.
So back then for me, and then on a personal level, I mean, I wasn't the best athlete back then or whatever, right? But for me, when it comes to the national team, it was always Singapore first, right?
Yeah.
So whatever it was, training on Tuesday, Thursday nights, after a long day teaching in school, yeah, you know, and then extra gym sessions in the morning, 6 a.m. Yeah. before assembly, we would still do that. Just so that we can keep ourselves relevant, keep stay.
Do you do that on your own? The gym sessions before school? Yeah,
have to.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the other guys were either studying or if they're working or other jobs, you don't have to go so early anyway.
Right.
But for me, as a teacher, you know, right, we start early and all that, so we don't have a choice.
You're right.
Then, definitely an honor. For me, there was not a doubt. I have seen people talk about that as a sacrifice.
Even in rugby.
And I get very, very, very irritated when people tell me that, oh, it's so tiring, I need to do this.
Nice. It's a good seg, by the way. You spoke about being a teacher and you started teaching way back in 2011, I think, with day seg,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And then obviously you moved on and St. Andrews seg. You were teaching for about, what, a good 11 years?
Yep.
How is teaching like for you? You know, and you coached the rugby team as well in school, or was that somebody else who did it?
We had coaches.
Okay.
But I was a bit more hands-on, in a sense, purely because I knew the game and all that.
Nice. It helps, right?
It helps.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, it helps.
Of course.
Yeah.
Teaching for me, when I made the decision to go into teaching back then was purely because I wanted to do something sport-related.
Okay.
So my passion for sport, growing up and all that, forced me to think about sporting career choices. Back then I think not many options, right? It was either coaching or being a PE teacher and all that. And the coaching scene wasn't so developed, especially for rugby and other things.
Right.
So PE teacher, that seemed to be the viable option.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So I went in there. 10, 11 years I was teaching. For a good part of that 10, 11 years, I think for 6 of those years, I was playing and teaching.
Yep.
Right. And then towards the end, it's really just focused on my job as an educator.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, after that long, right?
Mm.
And you quit teaching.
Yes.
And then you went into the Spotify Kids, right?
Yeah.
What was your thinking behind this? Because not many people will do that. Because, you know, you've been teaching for 11 years. It's probably like a, I don't know what you call it, an iron rice bowl or whatever you want to call
it. Iron rice bowl is the exact term.
Yeah, because it's stable, basically, in a way. Unless you do something stupid, right?
Yeah.
Get sacked or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of stable and, you know, why leave teaching? Because it's not easy, right?
Not easy.
Not a lot of teachers will actually do that, especially after a long time teaching, and then go and do something. And you just branched out doing something which is, I'm sure it's your love and your passion. We're going to talk about that as well, right? But why leave?
Yeah, so back then, I think the thinking for me was that there was a bit of fear and a bit of that challenge element. Okay. So the fear was whether I would be stagnating.
In school, you mean?
In school, in teaching, in terms of personal development. Mm. Back then, I was 30 plus. You know,
were you the HOD already?
Yes.
of sports?
Yeah, right. So for me, I was at that point where I didn't see myself being like a vice principal or principal.
Okay.
And then I asked myself, am I going to spend another 25 years being in this role?
Mm.
Then I panicked a bit, right? So that's where the fear came in.
Mm.
So the challenge part was about, you know, whether I can stretch myself a bit more. I'm a big believer in the growth mindset idea and continuing to self-develop, right?
Okay.
Learning and relearning and things and all that. So the challenge element came in quite strongly in the sense that if my entire career was teaching and all that, right, I wouldn't learn anything else. I got a bit worried in terms of self-development, but because the outside world, the corporate world, as we all know, is very different.
Right.
Different elements to manage, different people to manage, to interact with and all that. So I made the strong decision to step out of teaching. But also because I had the backing of my wife and all that, right? So I know that at the end of the day, my wife was still working, the kids will be okay and things like that. So I wasn't making a rash decision.
Good on you, man, because it takes lots of courage to do that, right? Actually, to get out, like you said. But obviously, the fear of being being stagnant as well, you know, pushed you to do that. Let's talk about Spotify Kids a little bit. What pushed you to do that, and what is it exactly?
Yeah, so when I stepped out of teaching, this idea came about because of, like I said, fundamentally my passion for sport and wanting to infuse sport to the younger generation, right? And I mean, that's exactly what PE teaching is, right? And for me, I wanted to stay away from the traditional norms of a very structured, academy-focused kind of setup, right? I believe that the academy kind of setup is beneficial for certain sports at a certain age group, but really at the base level, kids should be exposed to different sports. Hence, against early specialization. So I did that for about a year, and of course, currently I'm not doing that anymore. So that was related to my passion and beliefs, with sport.
And it is not running anymore.
It is not. Okay. For two reasons, because I have another full time job now, and also because of my bandwidth,
I see. Great. Now, let's talk about your role as the GM, right? And you are the GM, as in general manager of Singapore Rugby Union. So, you know, we talk about football again. I make comparison. Is the so called the highest person in charge is the Gen Sec, right? So in rugby terms, that's you.
Yes.
So you are the general manager of Singapore. So that's you, right? Was it something that you envisioned when you were? I wouldn't say when you were a young boy, right? When you had retired, you know, and from the national team, and you know, you're slowly making your way, feeling your way, doing Spotify. And did you think that could be a role for yourself? You know,
I would be lying if I said that I didn't think about it.
Okay.
For me, fundamentally, it was because that all these years of rugby and being passionate about the sport, it was always there was always a desire to want to give back.
Okay.
And at school, working with kids and all that, that's me giving back in the smaller scale, right?
Yep.
But now I'm able to contribute widely to the sport, to the growth of the sport, to the development of the sport, and of course, ultimately looking at all aspects. Right? So, opportunity actually came about quite suddenly.
Okay.
I was coaching one of the club teams at one of the SRU tournaments, and then the SRU president came up to me and asked me, what are you doing these days? Would you like to apply for this job? It's currently open and you think you make quite a good fit.
Right.
So I thought, okay, sure, why not? Because back then I was still doing the Spotify Kids. I was still coaching rugby and all that. So gathered my CV, went for the interview, and then,
Wow. Great, man. Brilliant. And I think it all stems from your passion for the sport. Like you said, you want to give back. Yes. It's as simple as that, right? I want to ask you this. What is your brief as the GM, right? So who do you report to, by the way?
I report to, there's a board, there's an executive board.
So what's your brief? What's your objective, the expectations or the goals, and, you know, Singapore's favorite acronym, right? KPIs, right? Which I hate, right? But what is your main goal as the GM?
I think there are many interpretations of this.
Okay.
So there is a textbook interpretation of purely an administrative function, right?
Okay.
You are the chief administrator in the NSA.
Okay.
There is also people that think that the GM is just managing different aspects of rugby.
Okay.
For me, I see it a bit differently because of my passion and my years of involvement with the sport. So I see it as a bit of a custodian of everything in Singapore that touches rugby. So that can be quite a loaded term, right?
Right.
So all the way from kids, junior rugby development, schools, clubs, and then you move on up the ranks to high performance, your sevens teams, your seven-a-side teams, your major games teams, your 15-a-side teams, and then the clubs, the community, taking care of this entire aspect.
Right.
And then, of course, the pathways and the pipelines leading up to this entire aspect. Your funding pathways, your marketing pathways, and things like that.
It's huge, man. It's massive. But this is something that you have taken on.
Yes.
It wasn't spoken to you. It wasn't, you know.
To be very honest, I could survive doing just an administrative role like that.
Right. But you have taken it on your own, right? Because purely because the sport needs something.
I mean, there's a reason why we do all this, right? Like, you take time out of your own work as well to speak to people, right, to engage, to tell stories and all that. So same thing for me. It's a lot of going back to passion, going back to why we start, going back to ensuring that the next generation has something to step onto the field with.
Right.
So for me, I honestly, I'm not sure where we will end up with this job. I'm not sure where I will lead the union to.
Is this a contract basis or is just, it's full-time employment?
It's full-time employment.
Nice, okay. Yeah. And again, I just love doing the comparison to the football side of things, right? This is equivalent to, you know, not now, because I don't think it exists right now. It's the Arsene Wengers and the Alex Fergusons in charge of the whole team, and they do everything. They do everything, right? Even they're in charge of the stadiums, you know, how you want the stadiums to be built and stuff you know. So that's kind of like that.
Something,
you know?
Like that.
You just want to, you know, be overseeing everything and get involved in everything and you know, that's great, man. Good luck, because I think it's massive, but I think if there's anyone who can do the job as well as, you know.
I hope so.
Yeah, you know, and it's been what, 1 year?
7 months.
7 months, yep. I want to ask you that. The next one is, how has it been so far in terms of, has it been a seamless transition from, you know, just playing the sport and then coaching, and then now you don't really do the coaching bit, you know, the administrative part, right? Has it been seamless or has it been a challenge for you?
To me, it's a positive challenge, like, in the sense that, like I said, transiting from teaching to this role, ultimately, from teaching to coaching, for me, seamless. Right, because the communication skills, the tools are there, you know. I think it's quite seamless. But from being a teacher, educator, coach to this, which is more of an administrative and managerial role, taking care of different aspects, that's where the positive challenge for me is. I think all of a sudden now I find myself every day I would think about marketing, BD, finance, budgets, as well as national teams, grassroots development and all that. So for me, currently, 7 months in, still an exciting challenge. Ask me again in a few months.
What has been the major difficulty to you, if you have to name one, like real, a real challenge so far?
Communication pathways.
Between?
So, at all levels.
Okay.
So from the board to myself, from myself to the board, from the union to community, community to union.
Is this trying to change what has been done before? Is like trying to change the pathways and how things are supposed to be done, you know, that kind of thing?
A bit of that. Yeah. A bit of that.
Right.
I think maybe because my perspective is from the ground up. Because I came through the ranks.
Right.
I was a player for a large part of this. So I see things from that perspective.
Right.
So the challenge is, like I said, connecting all these elements.
Right. You know, you are a true and true rugby person from the sport itself, like you said, from ground up, right? Do you think we need more of this in NSAs in general? You know, because then you have people who know the sport, probably would have coached maybe here and there, but not at the elite level, but you know the sport in and outs. Do you think we need more of that, people like that who know the sport to be in charge? Not really the administrative part, but, you know, the technical side of things, you know, the getting the coaching side, you know, the coaching aspect done, you know, national teams, you know. Do you think we need more of that?
I can't speak for other sports. In fact, I don't know. Mine is still an experiment in progress, so I don't know whether it will work.
Okay.
But I think there is value in that. I think it's important, especially as NSAs, right? I think, again, this is just my view. Right? I may be totally wrong, but I think there are some NSAs that maybe operate a bit too administratively and out of context. I think, especially in Singapore, right, in a small, a bit of a kampung nation, right?
Right.
It's not about, we are not dealing with millions and millions of athletes.
Yep.
It's really a small group of passionate sports guys, whether they are in their clubs or schools or communities, right?
Mm.
So it shouldn't be, everything shouldn't be done in a textbook manner.
Yeah.
So there's an element of that context.
Right.
Whether or not it applies to all sports, I can't say.
Right.
But I think there's value in having that person with that contextual knowledge, okay. That person with that ground up perspective.
Anything new coming up? You know, as some for you who's been here for 7 months or so in the role, any new initiatives coming up in the near future or anything in rugby?
Nothing fantastically new.
Okay.
But I think this year, we are finally in a good position and stable enough after COVID to say that we are going to come back with some of the age group programs.
Ah.
Right. So your pathways, which already pre-established like in the past, right?
Mm.
And then I think, so your under 16 age group programs, your under 18 age group, these are all coming back this year.
Okay.
In May, we have the Sevens event.
Mm.
The Singapore Sevens at the stadium.
Right.
So this year we have a bigger role in that.
Okay.
So we are working with World Rugby to build in some of the ancillary tournaments.
Right.
The national team will be playing in one of the ancillary tournaments as well.
Okay.
And then this year we'll also see the return of our 15-a-side competition in July.
Right.
So the men's team will finally play after 4 years.
You spoke about the age groups trying to get that back in, right? I just wanted to ask you this. I don't know. Is it only me or are there enough players at the primary school level playing rugby? Like schools offering rugby as a CCA? Because I think there's not many, right? Can we do something? Like, is there something?
Yeah. So I think there has been an issue that has been existent for a long time.
Yeah.
So there are currently about 20 primary schools offering rugby.
Out of.
There are hundreds of primary schools, right?
There's
only 20 primary schools offering rugby.
Okay.
And then in secondary schools, there's about 12 or 13.
Why? Is there a reason why?
Why?
What,
So if you look at it, right, it's the same pool of players that you're competing for. So in every school, let's say you have a cohort of your school population, let's say it's 1,000.
Okay.
Right. There's only so many team sports that you can afford to field. You want to have a strong football team. If you want to have a strong
So what you're saying is the overlap, as in some players.
So
might
that
be,
talent pool might be depleted in each school.
Right.
So it's tough because fielding currently the format in our secondary schools is that 15-a-side format, right?
Right.
So one team, you need to have about 30 players.
Mm.
And then if you want your fastest guy, you want your best athletes who also may be needed for your soccer team or your
But then they
team.
Could do something that you did.
That's pushing the limits.
For CCAs, nah, I'm just kidding.
But there are schools that allow for this, right? I mean, if I'm not wrong, some of the IB schools, because the timeline for them with their exams and all that's slightly different.
Yeah.
So there are athletes that are dual hatting in their sports.
But I really would love to see more, you know. No, I'm serious. Like more rugby primary school students playing.
Yeah. So an actual thing that is happening right now, similar to what football is doing with the Unleash the Raw and the Youth League, right?
Okay.
Something that's been existent for the last few years is the Junior Rugby Clubs League.
Is this something like the Active SG kind of thing?
It is exactly the same as what the Youth Football League is doing now.
Ah, okay.
So there is a vibrant pool of about 2,000-3,000 kids playing every Saturday.
Ah, so this is the primary school or the
this
older
is,
ones?
Junior. So all the way from 6 years old to 17 years old.
Great.
Yeah. And they play for their clubs. So a lot of the primary school kids that are actually interested in rugby may not have a CCA in school.
Right.
This is their option.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Now that's the thing that I wanted to see, especially, you know, as like you know, you go out anywhere, the stadium, you see the footballers, right?
Yeah.
I just want to see that rugby bit, you know. I think that would be fun, man. What are the changes personally you want to see in rugby? In the sport here in Singapore, especially?
I mean, just riding on that last topic, right, about what you want to see.
Yeah.
Right. So that visibility of rugby, right, just the prominence. Currently, not every NSA can say that we have a big event on our calendar, which we have, right? We should, I mean, from the rugby union's perspective, ride on this to gain a bit more visibility.
Right.
And hopefully the visibility transcends to, like you said, the Junior Rugby Clubs League. You said it yourself, right? Now you drive past stadiums on Saturdays, you see kids playing football, which is a beautiful sight. The rugby fields are a bit more secluded, more...
Of course.
But there are...
Where are the rugby fields, man? You see, I don't
that's
know.
That's another question.
I don't know. Where are they? I know is the Yio Chu Kang Stadium is one. Is it?
So currently, rugby is only played in Yio Chu Kang, Jurong West.
Jurong West Stadium?
Yes.
Okay.
And CCAB.
Right.
As official stadium.
This is where the Marlin Road...
CCAB
sorry, in
the,
Orchard.
The Bukit Timah one.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Off NUS. And then a lot of the club games are all at international school fields.
Nice. All right, man. I'm really looking forward to all these and the new initiatives that you're speaking about. Now, it's almost time to go, but I always end up with a quick fire round.
Mm.
Okay, you got to answer in within 5 seconds or so. Okay. Easy peasy for you, I'm sure.
Okay.
First one, All Blacks or South Africa?
All Blacks.
Well, that's fast. I wanted to ask you Liverpool or Man U, but I already know the answer, right? Cantona or Ronaldo?
Which Ronaldo?
Nah, the Man U one, obviously.
Cantona.
Yeah.
Cantona.
If I would say Ronaldo Brazilian?
Still Cantona.
Favorite pre-match meal?
Meal, no, but I would have a latte pre-match.
Pre-match?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Your pet peeve as a coach? There's many, I know.
Lack of resilience.
Okay, nice. The biggest achievement professionally?
Professionally, work-wise. What's the problem?
Problem? Too many, eh?
No. There's a reason why I haven't achieved much in my
okay,
work.
Okay. Just one. Off your head, man.
Off my head. Just being a head of department in my school.
Nice. Yeah. Biggest disappointment?
Biggest disappointment, not studying harder when I was young.
But it's all right, right? You see where you
only
are.
Only because
right
of this quick fire round, I had to answer that.
Three words to describe yourself. Three.
Three words.
Yeah.
Lifelong learning.
Wow, not bad, man. That's quick. What motivates you the most?
What motivates me? The future. One thing to ensure that the future is sustainable. So I apply that principle at home as well.
Mm.
So every time I'm lazy or tired, I ask myself, what kind of father am I going to be? What kind of kids? What kind of role model am I going to be to my kids, right? Then start things a certain way.
Nice. Who would you like to be stuck with in a deserted island and why? Minus your wife, huh? Wife and kids are out.
Stuck with on a deserted island. Elon Musk.
And why?
Why? He will probably think of a way out of the island.
Oh, right. Not bad, man. Last question, right? Your favorite podcast?
The Silver Fox Hustle.
Lovely. Now, for listeners out there, people are watching this, right? And for beginners as well, kids taking up the sport, any advice for them?
Kids taking up the sport, beginners, anyone interested, anyone curious about the game, go and try it. Don't be too bothered about the technicalities.
Okay.
Don't think about the set pieces. Don't worry too much about whether it will affect your DSA and all that. Right. At the end of the day, it's why we love the sport, right? It's the passion part, right? So get a ball, get running around, and start running away from your friends or whatever. But that's how you start.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Mr. Sidney Kumar, thank you very much, man, for being on the podcast.
Thank you,
any last thoughts you want to, any shout out to anyone?
No. I think to Shasi. Thank you. Keep doing
you're,
I think.
You're welcome, man.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
This has been the latest episode of the Silver Fox Hustle podcast with my special guest, the GM of SRU. Mr. Sidney Kumar, thank you again for being here, for being, so candid as well, and good luck to you, for your future undertaking, especially with the SRU. I think you've been doing a good job so far. Keep on pushing for the sport of rugby. Yep. And I hope to see you soon again, man, my friend. Well, this has been the latest episode. The hustle beats talent when talent doesn't hustle. Cheers, man.